Hey there, everybody. Welcome to A Theology of Hustle, where we talk about work, ministry, and the people who make an art out of bringing them together. This is episode 19, and I am super excited about this episode, as I seem to be about every episode, but this one is special. I am bringing to you Kathy today, and Kathy is special to me because she is my mother-in-law. So while she was here for a visit, we decided to go ahead and interview her, and this interview is solid gold, people. You have got to listen to this. I love this interview because it is a journey through her vocational history. It is the ups and downs. It is real life. And I think she just has such wisdom to share about life. And she's retired now, but just how to retire well and how to finish well. And she just has such amazing insight. It's also really cool because today is her and my father-in-law's 42nd anniversary of marriage. And we talk a lot about marriage. They have mentored young couples for years, forever, and she has just some amazing insight into all of that. We talk all over the map. She started out a speech therapist. She actually moved into vocational ministry and now has retired from that. And she has insight into that entire history of life. You're going to learn a ton from this episode. And she's just a fun person to be around and listen to. She has the greatest accent ever. And she's just really easy to listen to. She's the kind of person you just want to hang out with and enjoy hearing from. So I hope you enjoy this episode. I would love it right now while you're thinking about it. Go ahead and rate and review me on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And I want you to for sure let me know what you think of this interview. Kathy is one of my biggest fans, and she always lets me know how my interviews are. So it's your job now. You have to let me know how this interview went. Yeah, I can't wait to hear from you. I can't wait for you to hear this episode. So I hope you enjoy this episode with Kathy. Hey, Kathy, welcome to the house. Thanks for coming all the way from Texas to talk to me. I appreciate that.
Curry, I'm so glad to be here with you and JJ today.
Yes. Well, yeah. So why don't we get started by you just sort of telling us about yourself a little bit?
Well, I'm Kathy Jones. I'm from Lubbock, Texas. Born and raised Texan. Decided to stay in Texas.
Yeah. Was that a dig? At us?
No. I would never dig y'all. Or maybe I dig you maybe, so much I want you to come to Texas. But I am a seasoned woman. Just recently went into my 60s. So I feel like I've lived a lot of life, and God has, the great thing on the other side is God's taken care of me and carried me through life, and I give him all the glory.
Awesome. I love it. Let's take a journey then, since you are, as you say, a seasoned woman. Let's take a journey through your just vocational journey. So do you mind starting off sort of college and that sort of season for you?
Yes. I had a sister who was 5 years older than I was, and we lived in a small town. And so she was known for how smart she was. And then I came along, and I had these high expectations. So for a long time, and then I happened to date this guy that was this really great student. So I'm just thinking over and over, should I go to college? What can I do? So back in the day, before we had the Ames test, you got a catalog, a paper catalog that you look through and thought what you wanted to do. So I'm flipping through a catalog before I go to register, and I see speech therapy. And I read the little blurb about it, and I think, oh, I think I like this. So God had it then. I went to WT in Canyon, Texas.
So you literally picked your degree based on...
It should scare you to death. And then JJ knew from the start she wanted to be a social worker, so we didn't go that route. Jeffrey wasn't sure what he wanted to do, so he took the Ames test.
I took the Ames test too, yeah. It's a good test.
It's a great test. But anyway, so that's how I decided. And again, it was a blessing. I love working with little kids. It was a great career. So I did that. I also taught religion at St. Andrew's, where our kids went to school. And then crazy thing happened at 56 years old, later in life, Rich and I, my husband, retired from our professions and went to help plan a church. And I started being the guest services coordinator.
Okay. Yeah. So how long did you do that?
I did that for 5 years.
Okay. And you're now
retired.
Retired. Yes. Yes. Big time stuff, which is why you're here with your grandchildren.
That's right. That is a good thing about being retired. You know, everybody wants to retire and they can't wait to retire. And just for anyone listening that don't live for retiring, retirement is great. I love that I'm retired. I love that I get to be with all the grandkids and travel. But I see so many people that live life, can't wait till they retire, count down the days. And, you know, there's part of that job that you miss. And especially in ministry, that's not what I went to school for. That's not what I plan to do. But I absolutely love that job. Huh. So I miss that job.
Yeah, really. So do you feel like you had like those expectations of retirement and now that it's not so much or...
I have always had a great job. My speech therapy job when I left Amarillo to go help plant the church, I was in a job that I loved that I called a dream job because I love speech therapy. I love authors. I love reading. I love books. It was like a hobby. I'd go home after work and get online and look at authors and plan units. And so I love that. So I left that great dream job to go into a job that I wasn't great on the computer, had to learn some computer programs. It was a little challenging at 56 years old. But I did, and I loved it, and I loved the people. I loved being a part of people's lives. And in ministry, I think it's the greatest time to really be a part of people's lives. You see them as they have great things with the birth of a child, and you see them in really sad things, a spouse that's ill and passes away.
Yeah.
So.
Sure. Yeah, I love it. I mean, yes, so much yes. So I think I love your story because you have this whole career path before like even going into vocational ministry. And now you're sort of no longer in vocational ministry, but still doing ministry nonetheless, right? It's like you can see this ministry just goes throughout like your entire story in a lot of ways.
Well, and I do feel like ministry has always been a part of my life. I've always, you know, we'll talk about the Enneagram, I'm sure at some point, because I know you love the Enneagram. But I think it was just who I am. I was just made to help people. I've always felt for the underdog. I've always wanted to help those people. And so I think always, and then when JJ was an eighth grader through a senior in high school, I led their girls' Bible study. It was at our house every week. And so I've always been a part of ministry. We taught young marrieds. I was really active in a wonderful Bible study fellowship that was a real part of my life. And so I always loved loving on people. And I think so much of what ministry is loving on people.
Yeah, totally. For sure. So let's go back to the beginning, though. Can you tell a little bit about your Christian story and some of like how all that happened? Because you sort of got out of college. I'm going to back up. So you sort of got out of college, and did you start doing speech therapy like right out of college?
Yes, I graduated when I was 22 and started right into school therapy. Stayed there for 5 years, and then when JJ was born, I stayed home for a few years before I went back. Speech therapy is a job that they always need speech therapists. So I was getting all these calls and went back to work part-time.
I guess in my context, we've known each other a long time now, right? But in my context, you were always the speech therapist at Opportunity School, right? But you had done speech therapy previously. You taught religion while the kids were in school. And then you went back to speech therapy proper, right?
Yes, okay. I did. I went back and did speech therapy and was doing that and loving that until the opportunity to come and help launch the new church in Lubbock became available.
So in all those years that you were sort of doing speech therapy or teaching religion, did you sort of have in mind that what you were doing was ministry in any way? Or did your walk with God change as you sort of like took that journey?
Really, when I really grew in my faith was when I started Bible Study Fellowship. My sweet sister-in-law, Olivia, I saw in her something different. I knew a lot of Christian people. I'd been raised in the church, but I saw something different from her. And she just gave all the credit to God, but to Bible Study Fellowship. So when one came to Emeril, I couldn't wait to get involved and did that for, I've done it for over 20 years, and I love it. And I feel like you cannot be in the Bible every day and not be a different person. You know, all these years that I've done that, I should be able to quote you all these wonderful scriptures and do that, and I can't. But when I'm studying God's word, I'm a different person. And I think when you are that different person and you are loving God, then you want to share that with others. I think from the marriage standpoint, when Rich and I did the marriage classes, I feel like because I did Bible study, an in-depth Bible study, I think my life changed and I was different. So I think I was different in our marriage. I think I was different as a parent, as a mom. I think everything about me was different. So once you've experienced that and you see young couples that might be struggling, you want them to know that you want to save that family and keep that family intact. And I think a big part of that is making God the center of your life. And not that because I'm a Christian or that I've you know, sought God, has my life been perfect? It hadn't been perfect in a lot of ways. But I know that you asked me earlier about my Christian story. So when I was a junior in high school, my dad left. And so life changed in a lot of ways. And so my mom was a wonderful Christian woman, and I saw her live that life, but we weren't really active in the church. My dad had not wanted to be a part of the church, so we weren't. When my dad left, it immediately took us back to church, and I watched my sister grow in her faith. I watched my mom grow in her faith, and so that was life-changing for me. So that was the beginning of a difference in my life. And Rich and I got married. We were always really involved. We did youth ministry. We were always really, really involved at church. But really the thing that really changed is when I started that in-depth study and spending time daily with God.
That's super fascinating. I love that. So, okay, I'm going to put you on the spot then here. So at BSF, what has been your favorite series to go through? Because it's sort of a different character study or book study each year, right?
Yes, it goes back between Old Testament and New Testament every year. They switch back and forth. And one of the greatest principles that I ever took from BSF was to not run ahead of God. And I think so often we have plans for our lives, for our children's lives, and we try to micromanage that, you know, when they're in school and we go to talk to the teachers, whatever we can do to micromanage that, we try to do that. And it was just a point in really one of our children's lives that I had tried to do that. And it was just so evident that God was saying, I've got this. I've got a plan for your life. I'm going to take care of you. Just trust in me. You say you trust in me. You say you believe in me. But do you really trust me? And it was a powerful principle to me.
No kidding. Okay, so let's talk Opportunity School.
Opportunity School was wonderful. It is a woman many years ago, Betsy Singleton, started that school. Love for the underdog, love for children that were not on the same playing field due to lower socioeconomics. And she just wanted to birth this program, and it started at First Pres Church in Amarillo. And it's going strong all these 60-something years later.
60-something years later, really? Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and she was the one that saw a need for speech therapy and just that they were behind in language development and just the need for that. So she just was a visionary, a wonderful, kind, godly woman that just had a passion. And I think that's to say, hey, if you have a passion, if there's something that you want to do, believe that God will give you the skills to go off and to start that. Yeah, so it was right. A ministry she started all those years ago and has touched so many lives in such a positive way. So it was a part of our family. Thanksgiving, Jen's Bible study, we would go and buy food and take to these families, and they are excited to get a turkey dinner. I mean, they were so excited meeting us at the door to get those. We would then take the kids shopping at Christmas. The kids would take them, and it was a great opportunity for kids that had lived in a world that really didn't know. They knew, they had heard that there were people like that, but they really got to be a part and come alongside and see kids that you would take shopping. And then when you got to the food court, they wanted to put their shoes on because they might have never had a new pair of shoes. Mm. The shoes didn't fit that they were wearing to school. So clothing was a big deal to them. So I think it opened a lot of their eyes to that there's another world out there. So again, in a sense, ministry, I think, was born in them also.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. No, and even in JJ, when JJ and I were dating, I went on one of those opportunity school Thanksgiving runs. And I remember delivering food to a family. I think I did a Thanksgiving and a Christmas.
You were big.
I did it all. I feel like that was formative even in me, even in the small amount that I did it. So how did you get involved with Opportunity School?
A friend of mine, still a great friend, just went to see her recently in Amarillo. And she was the speech therapist and was having another baby, and they needed somebody to come in. And so she gave them my name, and I went and visited with Betsy, and the rest was history. And even in the time I was there, it grew from the campus at First Pres in Amarillo to a campus out on Grand Street. And so just servicing more and more kids in the community is really behind it. It's been exciting to see, again, a lot of people that have resources, whether that be money or time, are able to give in that, believe in that. And even on the board, generations, now it's in the second or third generation of people that are sitting on that board. So they've known Opportunity School their whole life.
So it's a school based around just giving kids with lower socioeconomic needs a chance to sort of get caught up with the rest of their classes or whatever. So
exactly.
Was it preschool or were there elementary school?
Three, four, and five year olds.
Okay. So what was it like doing speech therapy with some of those kids?
You know, those times I had a child come to me at two that had no words. And when we first started, all I would do is roll a ball back and forth to him. And then just him feeling comfortable with me and just to watch him like a sponge soak up speech and learn speech and then being able to communicate. And we had the opportunity to take his grandmother and he Christmas and just to see again another world and what his world looked like. And I think, again, it's really easy for us to write a check to an organization, but to really get out there and see what these families' lives are like and what they're dealing with every morning before they ever get to school. Maybe they haven't eaten. Maybe no one's talked to them. Just things that we have no idea until we go into their world and see what that world is like.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And it puts a face to those, you know, they're no longer those people, right? You know, it puts a face to the category of people, I guess. Yeah, okay, so you were at Opportunity School, and then we have to talk about this transition with Rich and all of that stuff. So tell us about your ministry at Hillside, at the church that you attend, and then sort of how that your changing career sort of all happened.
Well, we have, as of this month, been at Hillside for 40 years. Rich and I were 22 years old when we first started to go to Hillside. So we'd loved Hillside. We'd served, been a part of it. And about 11 years ago, Rich felt the call to go into ministry. And it was just one of those things we really, you know, it's a big deal to completely change your life. And but he began to feel that call, and we began to talk about it and to pray about it. And it just became evident that that was the thing to do, that that was the calling. So he just approached our pastor, Tommy Politz, and just said, hey, I'd love to be a part of this. Rich was currently serving as an elder at the church and just said, hey, I really want to be a part. And Tommy said, when there's a seat on the bus, we'd love to have you. And so when we first got this call, we were going to probably stay in Amarillo. Life was pretty much going to stay the same. I would still work at Opportunity School. We would live in the same house. And then as it progressed, the opportunity to go to Lubbock,
which is about like an hour and a half away.
It takes
so.
Me two. Two. Some people can make
I
it an, hour,
an
half.
Hour and a half.
It but. Is a 2-hour drive. And I am pushing it. It is a 2-hour drive. But
depends on where you start, right?
Yes, which side of town.
Right.
But so I'm a real relational people, have a lot of people in my life. And so the thought of picking up at 56 years old, 36 of those years in Amarillo and moving to a brand new town. There was so much change going on in my life. But again, trusting God and believing, and God was faithful. He gave us friends. He gave us a thriving church for me as guest services coordinator. He gave me plenty of volunteers. I, in turn, fell in love with those people, and we just began to live life together. So that's when we hit on the retirement element that's hard. Those were my people, and I still see them, and I'm still involved. But I'm not there, you know, all day on a Sunday the way I used to be. So I don't get to see everybody. I don't get the little tidbits of what's going on in their life. And so I miss that. So that's been the hard part of retirement, not getting to see everybody on the same, in the same way that I used to.
Yeah.
And we had a great staff. I loved the staff. It's a young staff, and I feel like they were fun. And I think so often millennials and beyond get a bad rap.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
I say it now. Y'all get a bad rap. And the rap y'all get, I don't even know any people like that it describes, but that's not who you are. You do things a little differently, but you're very efficient and get those things done. It's just different than the way traditionalists have done it.
I like traditionalists.
Yes.
Okay, so let's go back to the transition, though. I guess in my mind, like, we've lived here for, what, 13 years or whatever? You know, maybe longer than that, 16 years? But I feel so embedded in our community in the short time that I've lived here. We just now have kids in school. It is unfathomable to me to live somewhere for 36 years. And then pick up and move. Like, that is mind-boggling. You've raised kids. You've gone through the entire school system. When that whole thing went down, when Rich was like, hey, I need to go into ministry, you know, I'm being called by God. And
what do you say to that?
Well, what do you say to that?
Okay.
Okay. And then I think it seems like to me from your story that there was a lot of comfort when you thought that it was going to be Amarillo, right? Like,
yes.
Nothing really changes. Rich's job changes. That happens to people, right?
Yes.
What about when you found out the opportunity at Lubbock, though?
Well, the great thing was a young man that we had known since he was born. We had known him all of his life and good friends of his parents. He was going to be the campus pastor. So that helped make the transition. We knew we were going with this great guy that loved God, and we were excited to see what God was going to do. And this was going to be his first church. And so there was the excitement of it. But yet, in all fairness, I will say, to be honest, when I would come home for 5 weeks after we made this decision, we could not tell anybody because they were going to make this announcement Easter Sunday. So for 5 weeks, a person that's very relational, has a lot of people in her life and likes to talk a lot, can't talk. I can't tell anybody. So I would come home from school every day. And at the time, I wouldn't have called it this. I think I was depressed. I would come home and sit on the couch every day because, again, your world is changing in a huge way. And you really can't tell the closest people in your world that you're moving. I'm moving 2 hours away. And I was at lunch with a couple of friends, and one of them said something about someone had recently moved. And she said, "And our friendship will never be the same." And I was like, oh my gosh. But the great thing, we moved 2 hours away, and that's God too. We didn't move 16 hours away, right, or 8 hours away. So people were really good to us, and they would come see us. They would come to Lubbock and see us. And we were able to go to Amarillo a lot. So we really were able to stay connected. And it's one of those things, too. It's almost like a cleansing in a way. You see the people that are willing to make the effort to drive to Lubbock to see you, and the people that are going to call you and still going to include you and ask you to be a hostess for the baby shower and to really continue to include you in their life. But again, I'm not going to say it wasn't hard. But again, God was ever, ever present. And that first year, planting a church, I've got to give credit to all of you people that have planted a church. You know, I think that is a term used real lightly today. Oh, we planted a church. It is hard to plant a church. You're going to a new town. Nobody had ever heard of Hillside Christian Church. And it's hard. There's a lot of legwork and a lot of hours. And we got people that were interested. And then we would call those people and go to lunch and coffee. And I think we both gained about 15 pounds that first year because we were having sweet tea and we were having coffee and we were having lunch and we were having dinner. But we got to meet some really incredible people that were so excited that Hillside was there. And it's a neat thing to say, looking back 6 years now, most of those people are still at Hillside. And so it's exciting. The kids that were babies when we first came are now kindergartners, and we've watched them and got to be a part of that. So
yeah, you were involved in the hustle of church, right? I mean, very much
there has been some hustling going on.
That's right. That's exactly right. So you went from then teaching kids speech therapy to working in an office at a church with a bunch of millennials, as you've already said. And even you talked about the campus pastor Brad, who has his wife has been on the podcast. Yes. But even the campus pastor, like you literally were, I mean, you literally knew this kid from the time he was born, right? You were good friends.
We did.
So just even, yeah, like working for somebody who you've seen grow, like what was that like, you know?
Well, we've been doing it about 6 months. And one day I went to Brad and I said, hey, Brad, I just want you to know, just if there is something I need to change, something you want me to do differently, please know that I am stronger than I look. And if you tell me you need to do this or you need to change this, I will do that. But I want to know that you're going to tell me those things so I can go and do my ministry just knowing you're going to come in and say, hey, let's change it. Let's do this. Let's talk. And he was really good about that. So we had a great relationship. Ashley, his wife, loves to tell the story, be nice to the neighborhood kids because one day they might be your boss. And so,
that is, you know what? That's a good takeaway.
It is a good takeaway. That's exactly what happened. And we don't know any stories on him that we would tell. So there's nothing.
Yeah.
Going
did you ever, you know, Brad, you better not step out of line, buddy. Or, you
he
know.
Was a great kid and he's a great adult. So he's not giving us anything to work with.
Yeah. That's rough.
That is rough. It's not fair.
My, people who I grew up with would not have that same same issue. But yeah, so what about the office culture? Yeah.
I'm glad you came back to that. Yes, so in speech therapy, you walk in and you sit at a horseshoe table and you work with 4 to 6 kids. And you work on articulation. They don't say some of their sounds the correct way. You work on that and you do a lot of language. A lot of the kids that I worked with, you know, they came to Opportunity School at 3 or 4. They did not know what a cow was, a pig was. They don't know their farm animals. So they really are behind in their language. They just haven't been exposed to that. Not a lot of reading and a lot of even sometimes communication in the home. But so you go from that and these sweet little darling kids, all my kids were darling and they were precious. And so I go from that and talking all day long, going to, you know, to visit with teachers in between, to coming and sitting at a computer. And I'd never been a computer person. I mean, I really lagged behind on that because I didn't like it. I didn't like sitting in front of a computer. I didn't like sitting still. Rich would spend time on the computer, but I never was drawn
to that. I was
your
tech support.
Yes,
all
you
those years.
You still are my tech support. Thank you. Yeah. But I didn't like it. I didn't like sitting in the office at first. And when we first started, we were in a tiny office, so it was me and 2 other millennials. They were great millennials, though, so it made that better. But it is hard. I mean, my world professionally and personally in those years changed in every way that you could imagine. And I know some people say this is a cliche, but I mean it. God is faithful. And I text it all the time when people are sharing their stories to me. God is good and God is faithful. And he was.
Yeah, so. Totally. Great stuff. I love that. So you were guest services director?
Director. And I've been saying coordinator and I was the director.
The director.
I didn't start that way. That's why it's not ingrained in my mind. I started part-time. It was a lot of people immediately wanted to sign up. They were onboarded Hillside. They were excited that Hillside was in Lubbock. It was exactly what they had been looking for in a church home. So they were excited. So they came to trainings and we got them trained and ready to serve. And they were, again, faithful people. Every Sunday, they were there. I would have people that would work every candlelight service that I would have, every Easter Sunday that we would have. There is a man that serves for us that has done communion prep, filled trays and trays and trays every Wednesday for 6 years. Every Wednesday. And he has a very big job.
Wow.
He is just this amazing man. But again, he is a great volunteer. He loves God and that he doesn't want to teach, but he wants to serve in that way. And he has been faithful in that.
That's incredible.
I love the guest services part of it. On a Sunday morning, it's like your party. You know, it's Sunday and all the people are in their place. Everybody's happy. And people, we heard over and over that people were so friendly at Hillside. Mm-hmm. So we just put a lot into the training and just, again, great people excited. And it was fun to see a church start from the beginning with no one and then to grow in this. And they're excited. They feel like they're a family. They've met these people, known these people. Our church is really big on home groups, and a lot of these people are in home groups together. And they've just made new people feel very, very welcome.
Yeah, it's amazing what it actually takes to run a church, though. Very few people understand, like, the back scenes, you know, the behind-the-curtain sort of view of the church. I mean, how many volunteers would you have to...
Well, I had 325 volunteers that I managed, and on a Sunday, I needed 120 volunteers to pull it off.
That's incredible.
Was before you did a membership class and you needed extra people. But I've got to give kudos to y'all and to Life Church for all these years that y'all have loaded in every Sunday. And I think of y'all's winters, and to think that there's a team of volunteers who love God, and that's the way they want to serve, and they're there regularly in that snow and freezing cold, and they are setting up your service. But my volunteers were great, and we just had this system. We have a system in place called PCO, and I would send that out on Monday. They'd respond back. And again, I did a lot of emailing because they would write back. And that's one of the things I miss about in the retirement season also, because I was in contact with them every week. And so to not be a part of some of their lives, and it was just a lot of times just an email, and then if there was an issue going on, I'd call or be a part or take food. But I just am not in the same amount of contact I was before.
So in retirement, you have been hanging out with couples, you've been hanging out with women. Can you talk a little bit just about what ministry looks like now that you are retired from vocational ministry?
Yes, still meeting regularly with several women during the week over lunch and coffee. Our favorite ministry that we are involved in right now is called Table of Eight. When I first started at Hillside, I mean, it was all new to me, and I started following a pastor's wife, Susie Davis, out of Austin. And one of the things she talked about was they wanted to have everybody in their church to their home for dinner. Well, our church had already at that point gotten to a point that I knew I wouldn't be able to have everybody in our church over for dinner, but I did love the concept. So every other Thursday, Rich and I host a Table of Eight. And what that looks like is just our round table. We ask three other couples and we have dinner together. And we have questions that we ask. What is your God story? What are your big God dreams? And it's amazing. These are people we really work to make sure that these couples do not know each other. So they come together. They've never seen each other. They don't know each other. And they sit around our table and share some of the most intimate details of their life. And we've been doing this since January. And Thursday after Thursday, it's just, I mean, we just always say God showed up. We'll be walking back to do the dishes and Rich and I'll say, God showed up. He was there. And it's just exciting. Then they also feel in our church, they see people that they know and they feel comfortable with those people. And so they feel like they've gained. And we look at it as if they're looking for a mentor, maybe somebody in the group is struggling with what they're struggling with. And then there's a mentor relationship set up. But it is truly one of the sweetest things we do. I always say to start it that I'm tired of the chit chat. I've known you people for 5 years, and I want to know more about you. I want to know what is your story. And again, people that I would consider, you know, really pretty close. And as we sit there and go through those questions, it is there's so much that I don't know. And again, that God opens them up and allows them to share really their heart.
No, it's I love that. I mean, even intentional time, like we're sitting here, you're sitting here talking about this, and I think there's an element to even this podcast where I'm listening to your story and like, oh yeah, remembering stuff and asking questions I've never actually got to sit down and ask you. So it's amazing that in intentional time, like how much it sort of changes the way that you talk about your story, right? Mm-hmm. And I love that Kathy-ism. I'm tired of the chit chat. Is that it?
Well, can I say I stole it from
okay.
Susie?
Oh yeah,
I stole that from Susie.
But it feels so Kathy to me. I'm tired of the chit chat, y'all.
Well, and I am tired of the chit chat.
Yeah,
and we all
good.
Spend our life chit chatting, and even sometimes the people the closest to you, home group, maybe you really haven't talked really some of those questions. Somebody else on your staff, wherever you are, that you really don't know any more about them. And you'd hate to let years go by and not really know their story. And so often their story is just like your story. And I think in our society today, in a world of social media and everything is painted perfectly, that we look at everybody else and think their lives are perfect. And when they sit down and they share their life and the struggles they've gone through, you are more apt to talk to them. You are more apt to reach out to them because you feel like, hey, they are not perfect. They struggle too. So it makes you real to people when you really share your life.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree. I think it's so much easier just to stay surface level, isn't it? Like just to stay up here, not delve into the sort of weeds of life.
Hey, can I brag on millennials again? Y'all are real and raw and authentic. Our generation, I was a church lady. I was at church 3 times a week. You know, I'm not telling you what's going on in my life because you see me at church all the time. Our generation did not do that. And so I love that those are things that are important to you and spending time together and really, again, being real.
Yeah, right. I agree. I do appreciate that too, the authenticity of it all. But you're bringing some serious authenticity, right?
That is my new thing since we moved there and got started. I always tell my generation, finish strong. You know, a lot of people say, oh, I taught Sunday school when my kids were in Sunday school. I've done VBS and I've done choir and I've done that. And it's time to turn it over to them. It's their turn. And it's really not. I love, JJ and I were talking earlier about someone, you know, in her life that as you've lived longer, there are, not that we're not all wise, but we have lived longer and know things. And I think we are failing younger generations when we don't share. I mean, Titus 2. I mean, God told us to reach out to younger people, younger women, because they need to know the things that we know. So
I'm blown away by that. I mean, that I really do appreciate that because I can't speak to that older generation, right? Like me as a younger person can't, I've tried awkwardly in several instances and it's not good, but like, hey, you really do need to be still pouring in. I think that's an important message for the older generation. And that's, I mean, who else is going to teach young people how to like walk the Christian life, right?
Right. And I would encourage too people that are your age to go find a mentor couple. We had a mentor couple that when our kids were in high school, we met with at least once a month, if not more so, just to say, this is what our kids are struggling with. How did you handle that? They were godly counsel and we appreciated that. But for, you know, younger people to even someone that you see that you think is living life the way that you would like to live life and see how they're raising their families, just to be able to approach them and just say, hey, could we carve out some time together? I'd love to spend time with you. I'd love to have coffee with you. I have some questions for you.
Yeah, very much so. I think that's super important.
And so often people of our generation take it as a compliment. It's not that they don't want to make time. They take it as a compliment that, hey, you know, you are interested in my life. You're watching my life. So I think they're more apt to say yes than to say no.
Yeah, totally. I think maybe an older generation doesn't believe their experience has value, right? And some of that's on us to like say, no, there's extreme value in your wisdom and teach me, right? I totally.
Well, as an empty nester, so often we feel like we've raised our kids. And sometimes we do think that maybe people don't realize that we do have the wisdom that we have. And so again, I think it's a compliment to a person 50 and over.
Yeah, I think that's a great message. I think that's a really important message for us right now. Yeah, it's good stuff. So can we talk a little bit about your mentoring of people then? You mentor a lot of couples, you and Rich. I mean, how long have y'all taught like marriage classes? I mean,
we were too young to be teaching marriage classes when we started. I'm like, why did they ask us? We have not been married that much longer than these people. But really, I would say from the time we were 40 on, we have done that. Did that a lot in our 50s. Taught a large young couple class, and we would have a thing called 4x4, and we'd have those couples into our home. Again, we've always liked that more small, intimate circle because I feel like people really are going to talk. Because in the old days when we had a Sunday school class and I've got 60 people in my Sunday school class, I am not going to put up that intimate prayer request that one of my children or myself are struggling with. I'm not going to put it out there in front of 60 people. But when I've got a table of 8 or I've got a home group of 12, I'm going to share those details and ask for prayer.
For sure. So what's it like sort of walking people through marriage? I mean, how is that? What is that like?
You know, the fourth is our 42nd year of marriage. We've been doing this a long time.
Wow.
We have. And we haven't always done it right, but we have always sought to do it right. So it's exciting to see a marriage. There's one couple that we're still close with from Amarillo that we started the walk and another couple finished the walk. And to know where they were and what the world would have said, this is over. This is over. There's no way that your hearts can be repaired and you can move forward. And that they have a wonderful, thriving marriage. Their family stayed together. Their two little girls have thrived. It's been the coolest thing to watch because you can do a lot of things in life and be successful in a lot of areas. But if you think you have either brought someone to Christ, enriched their growth, or to help be a part to keep that family unit together, it doesn't get any better than that. There's not much in life you can do that's much better than that.
Yeah, amen. Yeah, that's awesome. So I know there's no shortcuts to marital happiness, right? What have you seen? I mean, are there some things that you feel like are really important for every couple that, you know, maybe you could speak into to younger marrieds?
Well, now as I sit here and look, I brag on y'all a lot, and I brag on Jeffrey and Megan also. And one of the great things about both of your marriages, you don't come, our children do not come to us and talk negatively about their spouse, because they are going to wake up the next morning and they are still madly in love with you and it's all great. But they have just told us that one of y'all said or did this, and we're like, oh my goodness, I can't believe they did that. So I think that is so wise to never share with your family something about your spouse that drives you crazy, or something they did or something they said. You know, it's a great friend, Regine Trafton at The Hideaway. You know, that's what they do. They follow people on through. And her thing is leave and cleave. And God said it, and it's important, and leave and cleave. So I think leaving and cleaving is very important. A thing, you know, don't go to bed angry. And the words that you say to each other, they are cutting. It's that old saying of you can have so many positive things said to you, but that one negative thing said to you, and it sticks. And so just the way that you talk to each other, and just really to be honest with each other and to outserve each other. If you are in a marriage that even one of the people is trying to outserve the other one, it's going to flip-flop and it's going to work because you are outserving that other person. So outserving each other is really, really important.
Yeah, that's awesome. When's the book coming out? Because I would certainly buy that.
Yeah. You know? You are so funny.
That's what makes our marriage work. I just make JJ laugh all the time. That's great advice. And so you mentor a lot of young women though too, right? Just as individuals. And yeah, what's it like sort of walking young women through life?
Well, again, I wish when I was some of their ages that I'd had somebody like that in my life. And again, I think it's just rewarding that you know you're making a difference in their marriage and that individual and then their children. It's great to feel like you're helping somebody. We've got to go on the Enneagram.
So okay, I'm a two, let's do it. Yeah,
and I'm a helper. A two, yeah. And so what better thing to do than to walk alongside of somebody and feel like you are helping them in one of the most important relationships of their life. So I truly, God created me. If you're going to say what did God create you to do? He created me to love people. I really love people. I speak to everybody.
Which is true. Yes, I can vouch for that.
I do. Then why do other people not speak back? I'm like, speak to me. But I do. I love people. And so to get to be involved in their life, I love spending time with people. I love helping in a positive way.
I think that's a great answer. I mean, that is ministry, right? That is your ministry.
Well, and I feel like being available to people, you know, people know that I am retired, but I'm still active and getting to be involved in their life. I'm excited for Bible study to start this fall. I'm always better when I'm in that study. So I'm really excited for Bible study and the new people that we're going to meet. But Rich is really the same way. He loves people too. And he likes having people in our home. Hospitality is a gift of ours, as it is y'all's. And we just love having people in our home. And we have it down to a fine art, how we put the meal out, how we clean the meal up. We've got it down to a fine art. So we love having lots of people in our home.
Yeah, that's awesome. One thing I've been wanting to ask you this whole time, I did not realize that you were going to be okay sort of getting into your past and your dad and him leaving when you were in high school and all that stuff. How do you feel like some of that experience has informed how you walk people through life now and relationship and how you do ministry today?
Well, so since I'm going to go ahead and be honest, my dad didn't just leave. We had just seen my dad. We'd been on a trip, my mother and sister and I. And when we came home, the police came and searched our house. Mm. My dad was wanted on a felony. So, you know, small town, everybody knows you. And the police come and search your home. So it was definitely a scary moment. I won't say a defining moment. And that's one of the things I want people to know. Those things that happened in your life that we could easily add shame to, that wasn't anything I had done. That wasn't really, that didn't have anything to do with my mom. That's not the woman my mom was. And so to put that, I think so many people today, the childhood issues really play a part in your life. And I have not realized that until we've recently done 5 Days to a New Marriage. And it is so important. The things that happened in your childhood do affect you. And again, the bottom line, I think, is don't let it define it, because that's not who I was. That is not at all the kind of person I am. And what God did, and I give him the glory for, he brought my mom back to church, my sister to church, and me to church. And so again, that started the foundation of my faith. And I think that is part of why I probably care about the underdog, because of that event and God using that. I care about people that are hurting. I care about people that have so many strikes against them. I care about them in a world where today a lot of people kick you to the curb. And that's not, I mean, it was different for me. It changed my life. So in a good way.
Yeah. No,
God is good.
Yeah.
It's good.
It's so cool how he uses our stories, you know, to do ministry. I don't think you could probably dig into the hard stuff with people the way you do had you not sort of been through the depths of that, understanding your own story in so many ways.
And again, I think when you are open, a woman that might come to me to talk about her husband, you know, being arrested, feels real open to talk to me now because she's heard me say that I went through that. So by making myself vulnerable, she then feels open. And a woman that would say she is a church lady, she's there 3 times a week and everything is perfect, she's probably not going to go tell her horrific story. So again, I can look at all the things God did in my life and how he work those things for his glory.
So much so. Yeah, that's great. I love that. I love your story because of that. Because, I mean, everyone just would assume, you know, from the outside that everything's just kind of been easy. I mean, you're just this wonderful person to be around. Like, everybody loves you. And, you know, it's cool that all that comes from a hard story that God has sort of redeemed. I love that. Yeah.
He has, in a big way.
That's good stuff. That's good stuff. Okay. So my final two questions. Let's go ahead and wrap up. Okay. Are you ready?
You know, I listen to
you
all of your...
You're my biggest fan. You're
there's
my
one I haven't
fan.
Listened to yet, okay. Okay. But it's just because of
right.
time now, elements. But yes, I am a big fan.
You are. And you call me every time, and I really do appreciate that. So anybody out there listening, if they want to call me and tell me how good this episode is, I'm gonna need somebody. I'm gonna need somebody to tell me how good this
episode
is.
Don't tell me if they call.
Okay, so what would you say is your strangest job, most interesting job?
Well, I have thought about this.
Okay.
And Rich is included in this job. Back in our early 20s, we loved baskets, and baskets became so popular. And there was a store in Dallas, the Sample House, that we loved. And so we went to market in Dallas and bought all these baskets, probably more baskets than we could afford. And we started selling baskets. It was like a Tupperware party, but it was a basket party. And we were new to the party. And so we would come to your house, bring all our baskets.
Wait, what are you talking about? Baskets? Like wooden, like
woven baskets that have come back in. They're big today. Okay, maybe I should go back into that.
You should.
But this is what I've got to have if I go back into it. We got an old, like, ice cream truck. Well, I guess it really wasn't an ice cream truck. It was like a bread truck. We got this red truck, and we would travel throughout the panhandle with our baskets, and we would come to your house. Probably wouldn't do Chicago.
I didn't know this. Sorry. You didn't know this, JJ? Wow.
Oh, yeah. And we would come to your house in Pampa or Plainview, or I guess probably came to Lubbock, and we would set up all the baskets and sell them. We even had business cards. Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Your own daughter didn't know that
this.
About you.
Well, I listened to her podcast, and there were some things I didn't, I guess I knew, but I hadn't remembered one of them in particular.
That's funny. Y'all did a bunch of random stuff then, right? Because you sold pumpkins for
a while. Yeah, and it didn't matter what season of life we were in. I mean, starving is why we delivered firewood. And then we had gotten out of college, didn't have any debt, and we started doing the baskets. And then we did the pumpkins for a season. There was a piece of furniture that I wanted, so we did the pumpkins, and it was a family business. That's a whole nother topic for a whole nother day. That's in the strange category.
Y'all were in on the side hustle before the side hustle was even a thing.
We were. So it's time that I can retire, right?
You're going to have to find a new side hustle.
You know? I'm looking for it.
That's amazing. I had no idea. I'm impressed that we got something JJ didn't know. That's big to me.
I'm impressed too.
Yeah. Okay. So finally then, so what would be one piece of advice you would give to somebody looking to bring ministry into their vocation?
Can I give two?
You certainly can. Yes.
All right. One of them is I had every reason not to believe that I would be successful in my career and all those things, but I believed I could, and I believed that God would do it, and he did. So whatever you want to do, believe that God can do that in your life. He can make that happen. He'll come alongside of you. And just a real practical piece of advice, when I was a speech therapist in Amarillo, one of the best therapists in town had attended Baylor University, great speech path program. And I would go twice a year. I would go into her classroom. I would sit and watch her do therapy. Then afterwards, we would talk. She would give me books. She would give me ideas. So I think a lot of people think that you arrive in your profession and, hey, I'm the best I can ever be. And maybe even some pride that, hey, I'm great at this and I don't need any help. Why would I ask anybody? But just to always want to stay just on top of it and to say, hey, I could get better at this. And so just to reach out to people and say, you are really good at this. Even as the guest services director in Amarillo, I went to visit with her because she was great at what she did and I wanted to be better at it. So I think just to say, hey, I could get really better at this. So I'm going to go watch somebody.
I love it. That's a great piece of advice. Yeah. Thanks, Kathy. I really appreciate you being willing to talk on the podcast. And
Curry, it has been a delight.
Okay, good, good. That makes me feel a lot better. I was nervous. So, well, thanks, and we'll go hang out with the kids now.
So, sounds perfect. All right.
So how good was that episode? I told you it was going to be a ton of fun. Just a great time talking to Kathy and hearing about her life story. She got into some just real life stuff, and I think there's so much insight to be gained. It was such a good time. I am bringing out next week's episode, and it's going to be a little bit different. I want to take intentional time during this podcast to really build a theology of hustle. Like I said, you know, we talk about stories, we talk about people's lives, and we hit on theology through that. But next week, I'm going to be talking to a guy where we really delve into the theology of hustle, where we get into vocation. He's an author. He's written a book called Every Job a Parable, and I think you're really going to enjoy that episode. So be sure to stay tuned. Be sure to check out that episode. It's going to be great. And until next time, get out there and hustle.